me share my screen. Okay. So good morning. So this is the third now in our selection of these public policy and government engagement bi-weekly meetings. So this one is on HEP engagement with other government organization, non-congressional organizations. So I'm sure everyone on this phone call knows that the large portion of what we do is, you know, the annual DC trip based on meeting with the congressional branch, meeting with representatives and senators. And there's been various things floated about how we could expand on that to other areas or expand and improve engagement with other areas. And this is what this meeting is about. The plan is that I have some very brief introductory slides about who we are, which I'll give you very quickly, and contact details. I have then a few slides kind of framing the conversation, but it's kind of open to be kind of an open discussion between everyone here, where I've just kind of put some main bullet points together to frame the conversation. For those who don't know me, I will introduce myself. So I'm Louis Suda, I'm a Wilson Fellow at Fermilab. And my co-convener is Rob, who you can see on the phone, Dr. Fine, who you can see on the phone. Newly Dr. Fine, and Rajesh, who's not here today. Okay, so I will make this full screen and go quickly through these. Fine, full screen. Hopefully everyone can still see these, okay. Okay. Okay, so general guidelines, we're obviously following the code of conduct, core principles put together by the APS and the DPF for the SNOMAS program. Please try and use Zoom if you have a comment or a question, and we'll try to moderate those in order to have a fair discussion and let everyone have a time to speak. Please, you know, more people have more or less to say about this topic. We only have a small number of people here, but try not to dominate the conversation and let everyone have a chance to speak if they want to. We'll try to keep the conversation to this specific topic. I'll mention kind of how we've broken down the topics in this group later, but we will aim to kind of try to keep on this topic for this session. And then obviously always be respectful of your colleagues and their potential differing opinion. And the conversation can move to the Slack channel afterwards. If we don't have time to finish this conversation. This is going to be an hour long meeting from here till 10 central time. So I think we all know who we are. So this is the public policy and government relations. So we're covering kind of all aspects of that from, you know, activities, materials, training with both elected representatives at the federal level, funding agencies, and then professional people such as the OMB and the OSTP. And so we're gonna cover a few of these today. And I think I mentioned this before, that the most thing that this area has been focused on within Hydro Physics is this annual trip every year, which is led together by the Slack Slack Fermilab and US LHC users group. Okay, so we've broken these down into these four topics, which is what each of these bi-weekly meetings are going to be about. We have engagement with Congress on HEP advocacy and funding, which is what we had last week's trip meeting on. Engagement on Congress on topics that impact HEP, which are not HEP advocacy, which is what our first of these bi-weekly meetings was on. We have what this topic is, so I'll actually go with that in more detail later, I won't talk about it now. And then we have HEP advocacy training and education, and that's what next bi-weekly meeting into Wednesdays is going to be about. So just to remind people, as I said, we'll have these bi-weekly meetings every Wednesday, and the next one is this training and education. And if you go to this Indigo link, and you also add our Google Calendar, which will have all of these if you want to know what's coming up. And here's just some contact details if you want to get more involved. There's also a link to our live meeting notes, which Rob will be filling in as we go along, and here's how all the ways to get involved with us. Specifically, I'd say, you know, if you add the Google Calendar, you'll get all of our events, plus they all should be on Indigo. There's a mailing list and a Slack channel, and obviously the wiki, which has similar information on what I've just told you now. Okay, if there's no questions on the introduction, and right now I can't see the participants screen, there it is. I have just a few slides here to kind of frame the conversation about this topic. So as I've said, what we have mostly been involved with as a group, looking back from the last semester to now, is this annual DC trip. And this is something that's been going on for, you know, 30 years. And it is very well-informed in some ways. Doesn't mean it can't be improved upon, but you know, it's where most of our efforts have been put. So here, I'm just gonna cover some of the other areas that we have discussed and has come up during the conversations to now, but we could possibly expand on that with other, you know, reaching out to governmental agencies which are not in the congressional branch. So the first thing that I have here that has come up is possible engagement with local and state officials. So in this case, we don't mean your local representative, your local congressional representative, their local office, which is which was something we have discussed in the past as an expansion to the DC trip. In this case, we mean actually a state congress and other local elected officials. So for this, the questions I have written down here is what we don't have a good feeling of, at least in the conveners, is the advantage of this type of advocacy. What type of policies which affect HEPT, which are actually mandated at that level? Is this something that would be useful across the board to either just to have another way of increasing the general knowledge about high energy physics and the positive benefits of basic research? Or there could be, you can think of examples where a specific project is going to be built, or a specific location has some restrictive legislation that you we could potentially advocate to change. And that would be, you know, the different ways that you could think of doing this. Either could be a more targeted, you know, it could be a general approach like we do for the DC trip, where we just want to try and reach out to everybody. Or you could have something which is specifically for certain locations. Obviously, when I'm saying state and local level, there's a very broad selection of people that you can talk to here, whether or not you're talking to state Congress, whether or not you're reaching out to local mayors, or you're reaching out to your elected sheriff, right? There's a wide selection of people who fall into this category. And again, there's been no attempt to understand which ones of those, again, would be beneficial, and what level they would be beneficial to this effort. And again, what kind of resources would be needed for this? I mean, a lot of which you assume would, the tools that we use for the annual DC trip would be able to store the information about where people live, about which people are your local and state elected representatives. But I'm sure that, you know, again, this also goes to the question of how much time this would require and whether or not the time and the resources it requires is beneficial to the what we're getting out of it. So I'll pause here to give room for people to have discussions on this topic before we move on to other ones, if anyone wants to jump in. Otherwise, we can come back and discuss generally at the end. Okay. Well, I don't see any hands, so I'll keep going. So one of the other topics that fall under this very broad category we're discussing today is an expanded engagement with the DOE and the NSF. We have various different ways which we discuss those right now, about, you know, individual PI meetings. They generally have representatives to come to conferences. We have HEPAP. You know, there is, but one thing that has been discussed is we don't have a community-based entity for giving feedback to the DOE and the NSF. Specifically, this has come up in relation to a few areas of diet, which we've listed down here. The DOE and the NSF follow the guidelines as laid out in the P5 plan about which projects are priorities, and to a lesser degree, where to spend the money in which is not project mandated. So then there is a question that's come up about having an additional mechanism to feedback to the agencies if the breakdown of what they have chosen to put the money on doesn't reflect what was laid out in the P5 report. And obviously that's going to, you know, there are, as between the time it's written and the time it's, by the time we're getting now to the second one, you can see there are multiple areas which has obviously changed compared to what's written out in that report. So, you know, it needs to be flexible, but there is a question there about whether or not having some additional oversight within the community, which specifically said with this role, is beneficial, and in what format would that take. A couple of other areas which have come up is feedback on grant criteria and feedback on competitive review. I think people here who are PIs know that there was kind of a changeover in the competitive review a few years back based on community feedback, but in a way to make that more, to be able to have a more clear mechanism to have that. So some of that has come through HEPAP-based panels in the past, but as HEPAP is mandated, you know, it's a committee organized through the DOE and the NSF. And so it's limited in some ways what it can do, because it potentially doesn't represent the entire community in the same way as a community driven effort could do. And then on grant criteria, there's been a lot of conversation about the breakdown of, you know, in research and in reach and outreach and community efforts, how it differs between the DOE and the NSF, and the amount of emphasis that this is put on within the DOE, and how we can do to change those fractions if we want to, or to make them, make them consistent within the two. We didn't have recommendations on those areas in the previous P5 report. So one of the other areas this conversation goes is what you would like to write in, to budget in the text of the SNOMAS report here, or recommendations to write in the P5 report in order to have statements on what we think, on what the community thinks should be the correct breakdown within grant criterias. And there's a question again about what is legislated and what comes through the agencies. You again could push for there to be more clear statements of this legislated within the language within the bills, which would take less power away from the DOE and the NSF to do whatever they choose to do. So okay, so that's my broad summary of this topic. So again, I'll pause for a few minutes and see if anyone wants to jump in on comments on any of those, or on additional areas where they think our current kind of feedback mechanism with the DOE and the NSF is lacking or could be expanded. Okay, well, I continue to see no hands, so I'm going to move on. Okay, so the next area that we have come up with is expanded engagement with the Office of Management and Budget and the Office of Science and Technology Policy. So these are things which I feel that, like, a day-to-day, most of us obviously have, you know, no connection to. They sit with the executive branch, so they sit, you know, underneath the president. We do have a yearly meeting with both of these two groups together as part of the DC trip, but as far as I'm aware, there was no other communication with them throughout the year. The OSTP, as its name describes, advises the president on the science and technology policy. The Office of Management and Budget is the entity which, for example, makes the president's budget request, which I'm sure most of us know hasn't been very clearly followed by Congress recently, but it is used by Congress as part of its part of the information that they use while putting together their own budget. you know, it's a little bit of a complicated way that these all tie together. It ties back to the agencies we were just talking about. You know, Congress holds the purse, so it awards the amount of money that we get as a group, but it awards the DOE Office of Science, High Energy Physics overall budget, and it mandates within that certain pots of money will go to certain projects or certain amounts have to be spent on certain things. There's generally a relatively large fraction which is not mandated, and then the agencies have freedom within the, you know, within the, what we put down within the fee pribe and how they split up that money between other areas. The NSF has more freedom. You know, we, Congress specifically awards money to the Office of High Energy Physics within the Office of Science, but the NSF is funded as the NSF as overall. And we don't have any say, or Congress doesn't have a say, into the breakdown into what goes to the, you know, maths and physics department within that. But that is something which, so as the DOE and the NSF are again, the federal agents in the executive branch, they will be following the guidelines from the OSDP and the OMB on how they, to make some decisions and how, what they choose to spend their money on. So, you know, there's examples that I put in the bottom here. So there has been in the last few years, various executive orders which have come out, which have mandated policy that the current executive branch considers to be important. There's an example here of this executive order maintaining American leadership in artificial intelligence. And you can see the impact of this on the DOE budget, where it wasn't something that Congress had put any money aside for within how they're going to spend things. And then the executive order came out, and then there was a chunk of money which went to went towards artificial intelligence research, which kind of caused constraints on the budget because we weren't expecting, you know, both the agencies and Congress weren't expecting that money to go in that area. And then the OSDP puts out this yearly memo. This is the most recent one, I think. Yeah, this should be this one that came out this year, which lists priorities, this kind of a summary of all of the executive branch priorities of how they spend their money, which again, is obviously talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning. It doesn't just cover high energy physics, it covers all of science, but you will see that there are various areas in there, which are areas which we are very involved in, and that, you know, drives the how the DOE and the NSF choose to spend additional parts of the money, and again is an input into the congressional budget. So there isn't an area where we don't really have any impact, but they have potentially had a very large impact on us. And you could consider creating additional communication or additional engagement with them to try and understand their where they're coming from better, and not to try to, you know, again, sell them on basic research and the impacts of what we do to make sure that this doesn't, that we maintain being a priority listed in things like these, this yearly memo. Again, I'm going to pause here before we move on to the next of these broad topics to see if anyone has any specific comments.
I have a question. Sorry, yes. I can't raise my hand.
Go ahead, Rob.
I don't understand what the conversation that currently takes place with OMB and OSTP looks like. So I don't know if you or someone else on the call can give a little more detail. I don't know if it's very similar to the conversation we have with the individual congressional offices, or maybe it's more similar to the really detailed conversations that happen with the committees, the congressional committees.
It's not that similar with either of those. I mean, in some ways it's more similar like the meetings that we have with the DOE and the NSF. So for the DOE, we have a meeting with both the Office of High Energy Physics and the Office of Science, and maybe more similar perhaps to the Office of Science meeting. It is an opportunity for us to tell them about what our main priorities are, which is in some ways similar to what we have in the annual, you know, in the office by office visits, but it also is an opportunity for them to tell us what their priorities are. And often they ask us, you know, an opportunity to ask us questions about some of these big areas that they consider to be important, you know, high performance computing, machine learning, and the impact of it on our field. It's, you know, it's been a little odd in the last few years. You know, the OSTP under President Obama was a very busy, very active office. You know, there was a couple hundred people there, and that basically dropped down to zero with the when President Trump was elected. So it's been a little bit of changing year to year in the most recent years, and the conversation is often, you know.
Well, we certainly go over our congressional trip, but we have to spend time bringing up to speed the person who's there. And sometimes we had an OMB person that we dealt with for several years. She knew all about us. That was nice. But then she went on a different assignment. And this year we didn't have a person from OMB, but we also had a new person from OSTP. And so we get to present our visit and what we do and all that. And this person from OSTP this year had previously worked at BNL and was not a high energy physicist, but knew about high energy physics, and that was good. And we got a positive reaction. So the next part is to get a reaction, which can be positive or can be patient listening, but not really responding, depending on which year. Or when there's a big issue, like we had a number of years ago, we can discuss that and the what and why. Since P5, we've had less problem there, but this would be the place to discuss it. We also get to put forward the big issues that we have. So for example, the funding needs for the research as opposed to the big projects and facilities. We have a chance to bring that out. We generally get some appreciation of that. Whether that leads to action, we don't know. But it's certainly kind of a necessary and potentially beneficial thing to have this conversation, particularly if the person, whether OMB or OSTP, stays there for a couple of years or more.
Thanks, Javi.
So I've got a pretty clear idea in my mind about what expanded engagement of Congress looks like, where we take the elements of what we're currently doing once a year and try to expand it so that we're doing some of that throughout the year to maintain the individual connections that we have with offices. Would the idea here be something similar to just maintain individual relationships so that when we come in the spring, we're talking to people who are more familiar with us?
So for this meeting, the OSTP meeting, we do generally take a set of people who have been there before. Harvey has done this many a times, and I've done this. And part of the thing we tried to implement a few years ago, there is, you know, one of these meetings, it's a short meeting with people who are very influential. The woman Tully, who, you know, Harvey was mentioning, who was at OMB, you know, she was someone who has literally written the, you know, 17% cut in the president's budget for high energy physics that we received. It is, you know, you want to make sure that you're taking people who are there, who are well informed, well educated, and can speak fluently about our field and are less likely to misspeak and say something that could be potentially damaging, because there is a lot of area, there isn't, you know, there is potential here to cause yourself problems. I think we could benefit, Rob, from additional training of those people or a different set of people, who we take to this meeting, who have training. We don't produce material specifically for this trip. But I mean, it wouldn't, you could consider that like a version of the summary document that we bring, the P5 summary document specifically aimed for this, which is aimed towards the language that these agencies may bounce off more. We do generally have like a pre-meeting, generally during the trip, like, you know, the night before, to discuss talking points and make sure that we're prepared for it. But that is something that we definitely could, we could make more formalized, it could be more, to work more in order to build stronger talking points to go to this meeting. We also don't need to just meet with them once a year. We could try to build up ways to have additional meetings with them at other times.
That's the question I had is, I mean, the spring trip to DC is chosen, the timing is chosen very specifically to have maximum impact. Is there a, you know, better time of the year to have a maximum impact on OMB and OSTP based on their budget schedules? I would certainly assume there is.
I also would assume that, especially, you know, for, you know, we go for with the DC trips on the congressional budget schedule, which is after the president's budget is already out. So you assume if you want to impact the president's budget, we would need to go, I actually wouldn't know, the end of the year, November or something, I would think, in order to,
You know,
Go ahead.
For example, with the committee staff, you know, every year I'm very careful to keep track of when the committee markups are going to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I generally, you know, contact the folks I know on the committee staff, you know, very shortly before that, the week or two before markups. And yeah. So
I'd like to ask Reese about that. So, you know, the first thing about our congressional trip in recent years is that fortunately Congress completely ignores the president's budget. Does it make any difference to us to influence the president's budget? I mean, that's what OSTP is all about, right?
Maybe let's hope that by next year, there'll be a different president who will be making decisions on the budget.
Yeah. Well, I think that Congress ignored the past two Congresses ignored the past two presidents' budgets. So it's not clear it's a more complicated dynamic than potentially than you would think. So both the Obama's budget and
even though the budgets themselves are largely ignored, sometimes the things like the initiatives for AI or QIS or things like that get pushed from, you know, the White House. Yeah, I mean, Congress has been on board with that too, but
yes.
Oftentimes those initiatives, that's where they get initiated.
Yeah,
I mean, I think
and those do have impacts on us.
I think I completely agree with that, right? And I think it was what I was trying to say, that, you know, we don't, you know, what goes into this memo and what goes into the budget reflects a more overarching policy, and you do see changements to do that. I mean, you know, as I said, with the QIS, and then more, if you look before the current president, it was more about, you know, green energy sources and more things on those lines were more emphasized. You also saw that reflected more in the budget, even though the congressional committees, which mandated the budgets, didn't have that much of a changeover between the last two.
Right. So this is a running conversation. So this last line here about the memo, this is really important. So both last year especially and this year also, you look at the memo and you try to react to it because those are really the priorities. So for example, last year we prepared, including looking at various things the OSTP director was saying before going to meet. And as you will not be surprised to hear, the emphasis was all on public-private partnerships, and science was given very few words of lip service, followed by the fact that the value of science is because of its economic benefit. So we engaged on that issue and asked about the value of basic research and how, you know, how that could be brought out more clearly in the priorities of the administration.
So I will point out, I just put up the memo here for those who haven't seen it before. This is this memo is the most recent one that came out just 5 days ago, which I hadn't actually even noticed had appeared until I was putting these slides again yesterday. I haven't looked back the date this was appeared every other year. So this came out in August, which again is something that can set the timescale. Another thing that we should definitely keep in mind for next year is we do expect there to be, again, a large changeover within the staff within these two agencies, potentially. So if that is the case, depending how the election goes, again, that will probably change should influence our strategy. If Trump is reelected, then I can... you'd assume that the staff would remain relatively limited to turnover. But if we get a new president, then again, that should probably impact the message that we take, a more informative message, and potentially the timeline somewhat, because with the current change in it, the past change in administration, it was a while before these agencies were fully staffed again. So you would potentially wanting to, I don't know how we find a way of keeping an eye on when the positions that we are filled, that we care about are filled, but it would be something that maybe we can try to do.
I think we should keep the conversation along the lines that somebody mentioned a few minutes ago, namely, let's look past this administration, because even that what you just showed, if you read it, understand what's being written there, it's orthogonal to what we do, namely taking credit for the AI revolution. I mean, really, how many dollars did the teenager who shockingly made some progress, let's say also against COVID-19, how much did that come from Donald Trump? I mean, so let's just try to think about, the future when we can have a rational conversation again.
Well, I think that we need to plan for any situation.
We know how to engage in such conversations, bring it back, re-emphasize the value of research. Hopefully the person at the level we meet, who's in charge of physics or of science and technology, sometimes both of them, are, smart people who understand what we're saying. So that is almost always the case.
Rob, you think
you talked about? Right. So I think I agree with Harvey's point. Although one of the things that we in these conversations generally should be careful about is not. I think we shouldn't be picking apart the present political climate too much, because we're trying to engineer a strategy that we'll be using for the next 10 years, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean,
I think we should at least be looking backwards 10 years and saying, okay, what's been going on this whole time, and try to build a strategy that would incorporate all the extremes,
right,
or some of them.
That's right.
And I think we've definitely, picked some good points here that we should aim for coming together either with material or an educational message that we had, regardless of what happens in the election. We've seen a lot of turnover within the last few years of going to visit these offices, and there could potentially, there maybe more turnover in the future. So coming again, and the current memo has not been prioritizing basic research in the way that we like to see it as overall, regardless of anything else, being non-political and having an impact on society. So coming with a long statement on that would be beneficial.
Yeah, that's one of our issues, is somehow there's a broken pipe, which is, we have this long process of going from meetings like the ones on this page and the ones with Congress to action responding to what we emphasize. And in the middle, there are all these steps. And recently it's really not come through. So we need to probably engage in a conversation about that separately in more detail. The other aspect, I mean, what more can we do? I think we're not, we could be more active in having a social media presence that says, this is what high energy physics has done for you lately. I remember a few years ago meeting with a person working for Dianne Feinstein, who was in charge of science issues. And of course, every young individual we meet with is different, but he literally said that, I think it was 2 years in a row. This is all great. What have you done for me lately? What can I or the Congresswoman use to promote what you say? And clearly we have very good materials that we prepared, but these days, social presence and saying, I've done this for you, I've done that for you, I've done this for you, not in those words exactly, but by showing progress, which you feel triggered week after week, month after month, that carries a strong message. Maybe we can do more of that.
The biggest thing that that I wonder about with these meetings is that, you know, that our message is the message that we come up with, you know, the materials that we make, all of that is really designed, to try to influence congressional members based on the kind of perspectives they have, the kind of priorities they have, which include elections and that kind of thing. And like Harvey was talking about, you know, what have you done for me lately? A lot of the things that we produce, you know, are sort of designed to address that, right? So to give them material that they can use to advocate on our behalf, right? But these offices, that's not what they're about. You know, these offices are not, you know, they're not people that have a generally good view of us that are trying to advocate on our behalf. And so, you know, and as Rob was talking about, you know, I think that, you know, we need a more fundamental general strategy as opposed to tactics. You know, yes, there are political challenges with this administration. With the last administration, it was the political challenges that green energy and climate change were the only thing that mattered. We were explicitly told that is the priority, period. And so, you know, every individual administration has certain political things going on. And, but, you know, we need to be able to more clearly identify in general based on what the position is and what the job of the OMB and OSTP is. What kind of things can we provide that could help move the needle to help them in a, you know, not specifically for their political priorities that we react to, but just to accomplish the job that they have before them. And yet, you know, I think that's a hard thing to figure out a strategy for, because, you know, the political priorities are so, you know, high level here that drive it. But is there some way of looking at these and preparing for these and things that we can provide for them that would more directly address what their specific jobs are?
Thanks, Bruce. Joe, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, I don't know if this is related to what Bruce was saying, but Harvey said there's a leaky pipe, and I don't quite get what the pipe was.
From our input, where we say, you know, over the years, we built up this need, which is now severe, for support for the core research, which is, after all, what really shines most when we discuss with people one-on-one in Washington, and what comes out in the funding allocations. So it's not, I think I'm really referring to the, mostly to the Office of High Energy Physics.
So I'm hearing, you know, that what we can do is try to provide them the information that they need to do their jobs well. And within their own priorities, as each individual, you know, within each individual set of, you know, from executive down, provide information on how our field ties into the presidential priorities. I think, you know, for example, would be to, you know, the statements that we've had that high energy physics is, should be a priority, for example, because of our QIS work.
Well, that is really a two-edged sword. A lot of our messages are complicated because, you know, we could jump onto all the applications that we help drive, but we're reminded periodically that that's not our business. You know, that our business is the basic science, and the other things are attendant benefits that sometimes come about. But, you know, even if we were to promote QIS, we have the concern that they'll say, great, you know, we'll double the QIS budget for high energy physics, and then turn to our DOE office and say, fine, now you have to double that and get it from somewhere.
I also saw that Mateus wrote in the chat, so I'll read that out. He says, going back to your point about social media presence, talks with point two, that outreach is something that's currently done as a hobby and not seen as a tool for the hold. And I think that's very true. You know, what are some of the things we've been talking about here, these additional talking points, additional materials for this area. What we haven't mentioned is the fact that, you know, it's a community-wide effort that takes months and months and months to come together with the materials that we have. And generally we make only a small iteration per year, and that takes a long time. It is, you know, we don't, having the resources to put together a new selection of tools, and as we've come from this conversation, we don't have the potentially the expertise to understand the best way to frame our message in order to talk to these agencies. And maybe that's something that we can work with our government relations experts with, from Lewis and Burke, though they're mostly focused on the congressional side. So I don't know if they would provide the same level of support for the executive side. But that's another potential avenue.
Well, yes. I mean, I think you're getting close to an important point, which may be impractical, which is, if you say, you know, we're doing fairly well, how could we do better? A lot of it is to have greater contact and also carry the message, but also greater continuity. But it's hard to pursue that conversation without reaching the point where you want a professional lobbyist who talks for you all the time. You know what I mean?
Someone who,
like, I'm looking at the Federation of American Scientists, because I visited them once, and they're a real, you know, professional organization with a huge membership, and they pursue certain issues, and their president is a person who's obviously, you know, 110% into that and those issues and following legislation and all the rest. And it, you know, it seems impractical for us unless we, for example, found a new way to raise funds, not only within our community, to support a full-time lobbyist.
Yeah, and that maybe
I'm not saying it's practical.
Yes, I mean, it's you know, we work with what we have, and we are very fortunate that that we are able to use Lewis and Burke. We would suffer very much because of that. But I mean, it's they are paid through the Fermi Research Alliance. And it's very, you know, it's very fortunate we get to use their abilities. But you know, it is an issue that it's something else we haven't discussed, that there is a possibility that that could go away. And what this effort would do if we did lose that ability to use those expertise.
So one step down from that, we have a couple of times gotten reaction like, "How come we don't see you more often?" The analogy wasn't great. It was like, "Well, you know, we just met with IEEE and they came with 200 people, and we see them, you know, two or three times a year. How come you're only here once?"
Yeah, I mean, 50 people, the trip for 50 people to Washington for almost a week is
what we do is all practical and realistic.
I think we should put that into actual FDE amounts of money, otherwise I feel that we may have to get more pushback.
Though I think I think we shouldn't be too down on ourselves. We've been making a lot of effort in recent years to develop a centralized infrastructure that is ready, in my opinion, at this point to support actual engagement throughout the year, which could be remotely or much lower effort. So it's a more centralized effort of a small number of people, and discussing where that comes from is definitely important. But I think we're nearing the point where we can support a lot of low cost effort from the community throughout the year.
So that's good to know. Coming back to a point that
quick comment. We have a couple times in the, you know, further past gone with about five or six people later in the year, like in the fall.
Yeah, and the last time was 3 years ago.
So the question is, you know, how we know, you know, is there a way to find out or say, hey, look, you know, it's clear that in a month there'll be this critical time, so let's get together a group, or let's launch certain individuals after key people so that we actually do this. Are there such times? How often are there?
So we have, when we've done this in the past, as Brice was saying, you know, this is when we've had a long continuing resolution, and then the markups or the when the budget, the original, so generally we go to influence before they write up what they call this markup bill, where they write down a draft of what the budget would be. But we have gone later in the year when either that's been delayed a lot due to a continuing resolution, or when we've come when those bills have been out and they're trying to make the version that the two parts that representatives and senators agree on, which has generally happened, you know, October-ish time. And we've done this based on working with, again, with our expertise at Lewis and Burke, who have been following more where Congress is in its budget cycle. We could probably do that working with other people. You know, it is all public information about where they are, you know. It just needs somebody with, you know, the skill set to know where we notice where we are in that cycle and suggest that we should go back again. And potentially go back to this topic, we could try and get that same level of knowledge about where we are with the memo and the president's budget, and then aim for certain times for this meeting as well. I don't want to cut our conversation, though we have a couple more slides, and it's we're in principle finishing the meeting at 10. So I just want to move on to these other topics. We can get through those. I can stay a little bit later if you want to stay around to continue the conversation, but I don't want to force people to stay late. So I'm just going to keep going, and we can come back to this topic later if we wish. Okay. So the other areas that we had in this topic was additional engagement with international funding agencies or international scientific bodies. This can be two ways. One, we put together a lot of great material and tools about advocating for US science, but so can our international colleagues take them to their funding agencies and use them to support The FDFC working on June. The FDFC is the British funding agencies. And then it could go the other ways, is what can we learn from other international science advocacy efforts? You know, CERN has generally something which has been, generally very well considered of what they've done to have a very good public presence and a very good advocacy within the EU. And then there's the question of, are there international funding agencies that it would benefit us to reach out to? You know, is it worthwhile for us to be able to have a conversation with those or any other scientific bodies that us as representations of US high-energy physics that would be beneficial to try and have those conversations on our own compared to where they normally happen, which is, there are, I know from my job at Fermilab, for example, that there are, people have, they will to build international connections there with people signing onto large experiments such as June, as an example. There has obviously been agreements made with the US Congress, with CERN and other agencies as well. But there's nothing which really happens at the community level. So there's a question of whether or not it's beneficial, and if so, what format would it take? So I'll pause now again. And then the last topic of conversation is engagement with industry, which is actually slightly off the title of this talk. So generally we see support from big companies for basic research in general. If you look to, there are these large coalitions for supporting the NSF and the DOE Office of Science. And we do see multiple companies with those groups, which are kind of larger and say more professional than us, companies obviously sign on to support those. Generally, we don't see the companies support individual sub-sciences within basic research. Can we benefit from those? We do have connections, obviously. There are companies we work with that we work with closely. Do any of those companies willing to support us over, sort of high-energy physics full stop, instead of just supporting the more broader basic research? And then again, similar to that, is building connections of what we've called opinion leaders. So these are people whose views on scientific research or funding are asked to give congressional testimony, or often write editorial pieces in newspapers or similar, which could be very, very, could be, have a huge impact on what Congress decides to do, or on what the executive branch decides to do. There was also a suggestion that maybe comes back to something that Harvey mentioned earlier. There was an idea that you could get various industries and various companies to donate a relatively, small amount of money for them, which would go into some fund, either for high-energy physics or for a more larger basic research. It's not clear how it would work, where that could be used for additional advocacy efforts. But how that would actually work is not clear. So there were the two remaining topics we had in this session. So I'll pause now for any comments and discussion on any of the topics.
Okay. I made some comments. I've been sort of typing some in as we went on some of the topics. So, if we wanted to sort of go back, I was sort of thinking as we went, so I wasn't thinking fast enough to make them.
Which line?
So if we go back to number one, So the question I had there was, the what policies that affect HEP are mandated at the local or state level. I mean, I can't think of many policies, except, ones that, directly pertain to Fermilab, right? Or things like that. I mean, obviously local and state level things matter there. but I was trying to think of, you know, what we could do at a local or state level that could, benefit, support, for our program. And in general, what that sort of led me to thinking was, okay, we go to a certain, congressional office, and, they care about what's going on in their district or state, right? And we give them examples. Well, my university is there. We've got students, this, that, and the other. We got procurement and all that. But we, we've talked about, like, just on that last slide, it would be good to have, influential people in industry that sort of lend their voices, to support us as well. Well, maybe developing some of that from the local and state government officials might help to influence our federal officials that are, providing the money as well. If we can go in and, state rep or senator, has a message on our behalf, that they can also, give to the congressman or federal senator, right? And so if you can say, we talked to so-and-so and all that, and they're very much, supportive of this and all, then maybe those voices help us as well. And on the local or state level, the kind of things that I could think of to maybe, get people on a local or state officials, on our bandwagon are things perhaps related to procurement, internships, vet tech, that kind of thing, right? Because a lot of that kind of thing really is being dealt with on the local or state level. And, a lot of offices I go to, for example, the vet tech, they were saying, oh, do you know anybody from our state and everything that's been involved in that? And they talked about, well, we can let our, state office folks know about this program and things, but a lot of the veterans programs are sort of handled at a lower level, a more local level, addressing veterans needs and stuff like that. So maybe it's worthwhile coming up with some strategy of engagement on those types of things that matter on the local and state level. And that way, when, I go to Arkansas, who has no, university, no HEP groups, I'll have something more specific and concrete about how our field is impacting, people in their state. So, so that may be the kind of thing to think of in terms of engagement on local or state level.
Thanks, Bruce. It is 10, so, feel free to leave if you need to. I do see a couple people dropped out, but I don't want to cut off the conversation. So we can, Rob, are you okay to stay for a few more minutes?
I also need to go.
Okay.
And I generally think that we should keep these meetings to the time we said they would be.
Okay.
But I'm not going to stop you from that.
Well, yeah, I've made some little comments in the PDF, so I can email that to you guys.
Great. And if you want to put them on the Slack channel as well, we can continue to have these conversations.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming. And there was a really good conversation here today. And if anyone else has any additional comments that they weren't able to say, please do continue the conversation offline.
Okay.
Well, thanks, everyone. I hope we'll see you all again in 2 weeks' time.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks, Bruce. Bye.
Bye.